Mildred Wyeth recovered consciousness, doubled up, a pool of vomit inches from her eyes.
Ugh, don't remember eating that.
Her throat was dry and painful. Suddenly, like a rush of cold wind across a midnight desert, came the realization that she was alone.
Those jerks! They might have waited for me!
She struggled to sit up. The floor and the walls were cool. No, they were cold. Bitingly icy cold. Mildred jerked her hand away. The walls of the previous gateway had been sort of a pallid yellow. These were a light greenish-blue. So the jump had been made successfully. But where were the others?
John!
She stood, blinking at the rush of pain behind her eyes.
John!
The chamber was quiet, and she couldn't catch any noise from outside the armor glass surround. She felt for the butt of the six-shot target revolver on her hip, the ZKR 551.
John! Ryan? Anyone there?
Mildred had made enough jumps to be utterly bewildered by them. She knew that everyone suffered to varying degrees, but there'd never been a situation where someone would be left totally on his or her own by the others. She stretched the stiffness out of her spine, finally making the positive decision to draw the revolver. Its familiar weight and beautiful balance gave her the momentary illusion that she felt better. It was so cold in the heart of the Matrans unit that Mildred's breath frosted the air in front of her. Her fingers touched the handle of the door, and she paused a moment, coming to the realization that this was about the most frightened that she'd ever been in her adult life.
Ready or not, here I come.
She opened the door. Christy came to, finding herself holding Dean's hand. At some point, as consciousness faded into the dark, the young boy must have climbed into her lap, and now lay with one arm around her shoulders, his dripping, tousled hair pressed against her breast.
Like father, like son, Ryan.
There was no answer, so she blinked her emerald eyes and looked at Ryan. Ryan wasn't there.
Ryan?
Christy had seeing powers. Not like those of a genuine Doomie, but with enough precognition to sometimes be aware of the threat of some imminent danger. Now she felt her fiery hair shrinking around her skull, gripping the damp skin across her nape, clamping so tight that it almost made her cry out. With it came an utterly overwhelming feeling of total disaster. Not along the line or even around the next corner, but right now and right here.
Now, Christy, no time for giving in. Gaia, help me.
She stood, lifting Dean gently in her arms. He stirred and woke, smiling sleepily up at her.
Hi, Christy.
On your feet. We're in deep shit.
Huh?
Dean recovered awareness almost as quickly as his father would have, sliding from her grip and drawing his heavy blaster.
Where is everyone?
Dunno. Something's terribly wrong here. I can taste it flat on my tongue like the skin of a week-old corpse.
Christy had drawn her own Smith & Wesson Double Action 640, a five-shot snub-nose 38.
Walls are a different color. Could the others have come around quicker and then left? No, that's stoop thinking, isn't it?
I heard some kind of electric explosion as we were beginning the jump. I reckon it affected the transmission. We ended up here, wherever here is. The rest might be someplace else, might have split up in different redoubts.
Christy suppressed a charnel image of the others being dismembered in the jump.
Why did just you and me end up here?
The woman was touched by the courage of the 11-year-old. It was all too obvious to both of them that they were in the gravest peril, isolated and lost. But Dean had braced his shoulders and almost managed to hide the tremble in his voice.
You were on my lap when I came to. Real close contact. Gaia.
What?
I just remembered. The last thing was Ryan's hand being torn from mine like some giant had ripped us apart.
You think they all got separated?
Possibly.
Dean rubbed the back of his hand across his forehead.
But they'll all be safe, won't they?
Sure they will.
The woman hoped that her own doubts hadn't shown up in her voice.
We could open the door and close it again.
I don't know. Might try it. We've always reckoned that these gateways are programmed not to send you to Matrans units that no longer exist. If that tidal wave hit, then Florida's probably done for.
Then we might finish up where the others have gone, mightn't we?
First things first.
The air had the familiar scent of one of the long abandoned buried redoubts, air that had been refiltered and recirculated countless times for the past century. Christie moved quietly to the door and readied herself to open it. Michael Brothers' realization that he was alone affected him oddly less than the others, with their combined vast experience of making jumps. Almost all of Michael's 19 years had been spent in a closed community among the tall snow-tipped mountains, a world away from the world. He had been a complete innocent about life around the turn of the millennium, and had found the brutality of the Deathlands difficult to handle. Only recently had Ryan been able to persuade him to carry a gun, a Texas Longhorn Border Special, that held 6 rounds of centerfire 38s. But the bizarre jumps remained a blank mystery to him. The way that one could go into a small, glass-walled room and just close the door, fall unconscious, wake up feeling like a rabid wolf had shit in your mouth, then discover that you'd arrived somewhere completely different. It had bewildered Michael Brother from the very start. Now that it had obviously gone totally awry, he wasn't in the least surprised.
I knew it.
He stood and leaned for a few moments against the olive-green walls. Ryan had told him that he couldn't go around the Deathlands in bare feet and a knotted robe, insisting he dress more sensibly. He'd acquired a black denim shirt and quilted vest, and an ancient pair of black jeans with silver thread along the seams and small copper rivets. A pair of good-quality knee-high lace-up hiking boots completed his ensemble. During his time with a small group of friends, Michael had seen enough to know that they wouldn't have walked off and abandoned him. That wasn't their way. They must have jumped to somewhere else. Back at Novanity, there hadn't been many opportunities to master technical devices. Life was deliberately very simple and basic. Though Michael hadn't taken too much interest in the few jumps that he'd already made, he had a vague memory that you could trigger a matter transfer by simply closing the door. He also knew that you didn't have any control over how the system worked or where you might end up. All that had been lost during the endless nuke winters and the time of dark nights.
Nobody moves by standing still.
He was unaware that he was echoing one of the traitor's sayings, which he'd picked up from J.B. Dix. Michael forgot to draw his blaster, simply reaching out to open the door. J.B. picked up his worn fedora and jammed it on his head. He took his spectacles from a secure pocket and held them up to the overhead lights, then polished a smear from one of the lenses before placing them on his nose. He'd been aware at the beginning of the fateful jump that something seemed to be going wrong. The feeling of spinning and disorientation had been worse than usual, and he detected the brief smell of overheating circuitry. It had been absolutely no surprise to find that he was alone in a chamber with walls of orange armaglass, one of which was cracked from top to bottom. Nor did he waste any time on speculating where the others might be. Mildred's face swam into his mind, but he resolutely pushed it away. He quickly itemized the possessions in his jacket, then glanced over his weapons. He saw the powerful Smith & Wesson M4012 gauge with pistol grip and folding butt. He slung it over one of his narrow shoulders. JB also carried an Uzi machine pistol with several mags that held 20 rounds of 9mm full metal jacket ammunition. A priority would be to field strip and check and oil his blasters after their immersion in salt water. He sniffed at the air, catching the flavor of pine trees and fresh-turned earth. That meant that some part of the redoubt was probably open to the outside. That, in turn, probably meant there could be people around. JB decided that the first and safest option was to open the door of the Matrens chamber, then close it again immediately. His calculation was that this wouldn't return him to Florida, which he guessed probably no longer existed. But it might possibly link him up with some or all of the others. Life was all possibilities that weren't very safe, or probabilities that weren't that good either.
Don't believe much in certainties, Trader used to say. Not unless you count death.
The sec lock clicked as JB turned the dull steel handle of the door. He hesitated for a moment as he considered the value of the Uzi or the scatter gun, going in the end for the machine pistol, sliding the catch onto full auto.
Here goes nothing.
He pushed the door open and stepped through.
three Kennedys.
Doc Tanner knew from bitter previous experience of jumps that the single worst moment was when you peeled back your eyelids to the harsh light of the new chamber. The longer that could be postponed, the less Violet was likely to be. His skin itched, but he tried to ignore it, assuming that it was simply a new and unpleasant manifestation of the consequences of going from place to place via a Matrans unit.
Damn and blast Project Kronos and Project Cerberus to Hades and back!
During his brief and difficult stay in 2000, Doc, a brilliant scientist, had been used on both of these highly secret operations, involving set clearances of at least B-19 or above. Cerberus had been matter transfer, and Kronos had been time trawling. The former had been amazingly successful, and the latter had been almost completely disastrous. They had both been part of what was known as Over Project Whisper, which in its turn had been a sector of the wide-ranging totality concept. Doc inched his left eye open, finding that the back of his right hand was close to his face. The skin was mottled with pale brown patches and covered in fine white hair.
Darling, I am growing older. Silver threads among the gold. A doleful thought. This grave's a fine and private place, but none, I think.
He opened both eyes and looked around. The rest of his words fading away. He had been lying down, his knees drawn up to his chin. Very slowly, the old man straightened. As he sat up, Doc noticed that the walls of the unit were a smooth gray, speckled with tiny spots of green. It was an unusual combination, and he reached up and rubbed his hand over the armaglass, peering at the emerald stain on his fingers.
Moss. Some sort of subterranean sphagnum. Probably of the genus of... Come now, Theo, my dear fellow. Not the time for scientific theorizing. I think that it is time to set your pathetic and appallingly aged brain to work on the fascinating proposition that you have completed this jump alone, and that Master Cawdor and the other good companions have ended up... finished up. Where?
He was aware of more bothersome itching around his midriff. For the first time since recovering, Doc looked down at his feet. Without any conscious effort from any of his muscles, he suddenly found himself standing upright, hands held level with his shoulders, as though he were about to surrender to some unseen enemy. He was also attempting the shamanistic trick of removing both feet from the ground at the same moment. The consequence was that he staggered around, banging into the smooth walls, getting smudges of green lichen on the shoulders of his black frock coat.
Oh, Coleoptera, in excelsis. Oh, the horror, the horror. Orthoptera's vileness.
Beneath his dancing, clattering boots, the floor seemed to be composed of innumerable tiny pieces of a shimmering mosaic, opalescent and glittering, with a dark, coppery turquoise the dominant color. A mosaic that was moving.
Oh, cockroaches!
Doc crushed dozens of the scuttling insects under his feet. His unstable mind was tipped into overdrive by the horror that flooded the gateway, seeping through a narrow gap beneath the entrance. Without pausing for a moment to consider the possible repercussions of his action, Doc grabbed the handle and threw himself out through the door. As Ryan opened the door of the gateway chamber, he was struck by the strange taste of the air. It wasn't the flat, dull taste that he was so used to in other redoubts. This had an exotic scent of lustrous flowers that had become sickly and overblown, a warm and damp smell that also carried with it another taint. Human sweat. Finger tight on the trigger of the Sig Sauer, Ryan stepped silently out into the anteroom that was always a part of the Matrans complex. But something barred his way. A scarlet rope with yellow tassels had been strung across the entrance. A large rectangular card was fixed to the thick cord. Ryan carefully stepped over the rope, making sure he didn't touch it, then looked back. The room was bare, with two short shelves fixed to the wall near the distant door, which Ryan knew would open into the control room for the gateway. He paused to listen, wondering whether he'd actually heard voices beyond the door. He decided that he'd imagined it, but didn't put the blaster back in its holster. The handle of the second door was clean and polished. Ryan turned it very slowly, pressing his eye to the narrow gap, and seeing what he'd expected, rows and rows of chattering comp consoles. The smell of human perspiration was stronger, overlaid with something sweet, like popcorn with honey.
Young man, please don't touch anything!
The voice made Ryan jump and nearly squeeze around from the Sig Sauer.
When this building was uncovered during an archaeological dig, great care was taken not to tamper with it. The Lord has been very interested in finding out how it works, but so far no successes with that.
Ryan recognized the language as English, but with an odd accent. His first guess was that it was someone speaking who came from below the Grandee, but it wasn't quite like the usual sort of mech speak.
We think it was closed up in the month of January, which is the first of the year of our Lord in 2001, which was when Skydark came and long nights lived for many times until our new Lord appeared. Please keep your child away from that next room, ma'am. It's out of bounds.
Ryan flattened himself back in the little room, knowing that any attempt to close the control section door would draw attention to him. There were others out there apart from the speaker, who almost sounded as if he were taking them on a conducted tour.
The story is that a big bomb exploded in Washington, and that set off the war. Not that war is the correct word. More like nukes in noon, and night, and morning, and after the noon also. About 20 lived from every 10,000. In the big villes, more like one living.
What's the technology behind this device?
Another voice asked a question that Ryan couldn't quite catch, but he heard the answer.
We know it was called Mat-Trans, and we think somehow it sent food or stuff through space. We believe it was a nuke trick, but I won't tell you again to watch that child, ma'am. But we don't know anything about how it worked. Could be locked in some way, so it doesn't function.
Ryan bit his lip, not knowing what was happening. Why was there a working gateway that they hadn't been able to use to carry out jumps? Could it be that it was only able to receive? If so, he was in serious trouble. Or maybe it needed some kind of priming, like a hand pump. Otherwise, the first of these strangers to go in and close the door behind him would have the shock of all time.
I want to go in and see, Grandy!
Behave yourself, Shad!
Thank you, ma'am. These things we look at are old and rare and can't be touched, or ruins come very fast. The museum of our past got more things to show. Let's move on now, hey?
Ryan had been backing away toward the gateway, ready to chance another quick jump to get away from wherever he was. Then the door to the control area burst open, and a skinny boy, looking about 10, pushed in. He was dressed in a black hooded robe, hiding most of his features. However, Ryan could just make out the child's face. The boy's skin was as white as a sheet. Not light-complected like Jack Lauren, but actually chalk-white, as if he were a walking corpse.
Who are you?
The room was only a couple of strides from one wall to the other, and Ryan wasted no time. He swung the blaster with all his strength, catching the wincing boy across the side of his head with the barrel. The boy went down like a felled calf. Then a woman, presumably the boy's mother or grandmother, stood in the doorway, her hand to her mouth in shock at the sight of the armed figure, and her child slumped at his feet. She was dressed exactly like the boy, pale white skin and all.
What are you?
By our Lord of Shadows, it's him! The one-eyed demon whose coming was foretold! He must be destroyed!
A knife flashed through the air, missing Ryan by a hand span. He snapped off a couple of shots, aiming into the sudden press of bodies that jammed the doorway as he dodged backward, intending to get straight into the chamber. Once the lock had engaged, the armorglass walls would protect him from anything short of a concerted Gren attack. But he'd forgotten the red rope that blocked off the gateway, and it caught Ryan behind the knees, sending him toppling over on his back.
The Condor must be stopped!
The Condor? How the hell did this person know his name? Unfortunately, Ryan didn't have time to process that information as a stout man had drawn what looked like an old cavalry saber and was running boldly toward Ryan, flourishing the weapon above his head. Ryan could see a flashing light above the heads of the throng in the doorway. He scuttled back until he was finally inside the chamber, firing half a dozen more bullets from the Sig Sauer, more or less at random.
We've got him now!
Yeah, the demon can't escape from there!
Ryan stood quickly, pulling the purple door closed with relief as the massive Seclock clicked shut.
Time to get the fuck out of here.
He squatted with his back to the wall, facing the door. Despite its thickness, the glass still showed the distorted faces of the strangers pressed against it, and he could hear their vicious yelps for his life. Ryan held the Sig Sauer in his hand, waiting calmly for the jump to start. He felt confident that nobody would break in, but he'd been counting bullets. As the mist began to gather and thicken around the silvery discs in the floor and ceiling, he calmly reloaded the blaster.
What's happening in there? Break the door down!
Not a chance, you son of a bitch!
Ryan heard his own voice swirl and echo around his brain, shifting into some unguessable and infinite distance. The darkness closed his eye, and then began to squeeze his brain in a shroud of raven's velvet. Before he slipped once more into unconsciousness, he swore that he could almost make out someone else watching him through the armor glass. Someone dark. Someone sinister.